Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good evening and welcome to the latest Burr News Facebook Live interview. I'm joined this evening by Jean Atherton, the newly elected leader of the OBA, and Leah Scott, the newly elected deputy leader. Thank you very much for joining us. This time of evening, it's good of you to give up some time.
Good.
By my recollection, this must be the first time that there's been two ladies in charge of a political party in Bermuda.
That's correct.
It's taken a long time to happen, hasn't it?
I guess one never thinks about that when you're just deciding you want to put yourself forward to help. You never think about how it's going to pan out.
The dynamic.
It struck me when I was researching this, and I was trying to think back. I mean, is this a good thing? I mean, it must be a good thing.
Of course it's a good thing when women are in charge. How could it not be?
Everything's good if you have people there that are prepared to work. And, you know, women are obviously a large portion of the population.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I think we're also caring. You know, we bring those dynamics to
the... You bring a softer element to the house?
I think women bring balance. Yeah. They bring more than one perspective. And as you know, the growing population of women in politics is increasing all over the world. So
I think maybe kind of slightly different dynamics in the House of Assembly then? Because it's been quite combative in the past, hasn't it?
Well, for me personally, I believe that it's very important for us to get on with the business. And I say that we shouldn't have to go up there and have things become petty and personal.
No.
Because when I'm on the street and in elevators, that's what people say to me. They said they want us to get up there and talk about the people's business. They do not want us to get up there and start getting into this petty fighting. And so we have to set good examples.
Do you think, this should almost be my last question, really, instead of my second question, but do you think the first all-female premier and deputy... Deputy leader and deputy leader will translate into the first all-female premier and deputy premier?
You never know.
I think so many things have to happen over time that I don't think that we can forecast anything other than saying that we're going to make sure that we're going to be a good team and make sure that we produce a good, viable opposition first, and then after that we will work on the next step. We're not going to get too far ahead of ourselves.
Just going to the leadership election, you polled Ms. Atherton 37.3%, 90 votes. Patricia Gordon-Bamblin and Craig Cannonier, they polled 151 votes between them. That's almost 2-1 against you, not far off. How are you going to convince the party, first of all, bearing in mind that level of vote against you, or for other people? How are you going to convince them that you're the right person and the right team to take the party forward?
I don't think that you can turn around and start to look at how many people voted against me. I think you have to start looking at what each person said that they wanted to do. And in some respects, I mean, you have Craig's a male, Pat's a female. Pat, as obviously, brings some type of concern about where the party should go, as did Craig. And so I think it's like turning around and saying, you know, if you looked at the Labour Party in the UK and whatever, and sort of saying, well, they had these number of people they voted for and this number of the others. I don't think here it's that you can turn around and sort of say that vote represents people for and against. I think it just, that vote represents the dynamics of persons looking at what each one of us brought to the table and thinking, okay, well, that person resonates with me. But from my perspective, my whole thing is that I want to go out. I'm a consensus builder, and I'm going to go out and we're going to reach out to the people and say that these are the things that we believe in. And I think a lot of people afterwards have said, you know, the things that I said that I wanted to do with respect to increasing the diversity, making sure that we get more people in the room, getting out into the Somerset to St. George's and talking to people and reconnecting, that those were all things that they believed that. And even those people who said, I didn't vote for you, but the things that you said that you wanted to do, those are things that I believe the party has to do.
So have you started building this consensus then?
Well, right now we are consolidating the team. We've obviously had some meetings with our with the people that are part of our caucus. We're inviting new people to come into the room, and new people have started to come. So that's the start, and then in the new year, we have some plans to get on our Somerset to St. George's up and down track.
So there's no fear in your mind that with 82 votes for Pat Gordon Pamblin and 69 for Craig Canyonier, that there's going to be any divisiveness within the party? You think they'll be light behind your consensus?
Well, I think that, you know, those two persons are in the room. They're in the House. They have significant responsibilities to do as MPs, as shadow ministers. Everybody that's in the room is there to talk about what's important to us in terms of a party, what's important to us in terms of what we can do for Bermuda. So I don't think that, you know, you're going out and sort of saying, okay, this was a particular hard line that someone had. So,
just talking about the leadership election, the turnout, well, the number of votes cast is 241, and that's significantly down when Craig Canyonier was elected the party's first leader. When he beat Bob Richards, I think there were 674 votes that were cast on that occasion. I mean, to me, that kind of signifies two possibilities, that there wasn't much interest in the first place, or your membership's down, or both.
I think you have to go back in terms of when we first had that, what I call, inaugural conference. That was us coming together as a new party, having gone out and, you know, saying to people, come out here, because not only are we having a new party, we're going to elect leaders. And, you know, we had a whole slate. Pretty much the entire slate was up for election. And so I think you had that dynamic where, you know, people were just very tuned in. Now, we obviously reached out to people this go around because they knew that we were going to have an election. I don't think that we had as much of the time to actually go out and sort of drum up and lead. And there was a long lead time between, you know, when we said we were going to have the election before and this go around. The more important thing right now, I think, is back on the doorstep, and people are still starting to come and take out their memberships.
Has the membership fallen since 2011?
Membership always falls after you have an election, and then especially when, you know, a lot of people don't keep up their memberships all during the year. You know, they start to take out their memberships again when you remind them that something's come up that's important to them. So I don't think that
was there an uptick then before the latest election when you were made leader?
Yes, there were people that suddenly remembered, hey, I need to take out my membership and come and have the opportunity to.
So you're not particularly concerned about the levels of membership at the moment?
Well, I'm concerned in the sense that we want more people to take out memberships, and that's why we're reminding everyone of their opportunities to have membership, but also what membership can help them do for us and for themselves. An opportunity to provide their input in terms of the direction, an opportunity to get involved. And many more people are indicating that they do want to get involved. So initially, I want them to get involved and hope that their decisions to get involved will result in membership, because membership also helps us from the point of view of finances, etc.
Clearly. Yeah.
Sorry, Leah, I didn't mean to be hogging this.
Did you want to say something?
I think that generally people were not as pleased with our performance over the past 4 years as they thought. We didn't perform the way that they thought we should have. And I think that's part of the reason that people didn't bother to come out.
They're disaffected a bit.
But I also think that people, including members of the party, are still shell-shocked by the result of the election and the number of seats that were won by the then-opposition. And so I think we are in a process of regrouping and regrooming, and I think people are sitting back to see who we're going to become. And I think that there are people that are interested in us and want to see us transform into who we started to be in 2012.
What was that?
A party that was inclusive, transparent, forward-thinking, wanting to embrace all of Bermuda and take Bermuda to the next level.
So why did it all go wrong?
I think there are many reasons, and, you know, I'm not going to point to just one thing, but I think we just kind of lost our way.
I think if you stop and think about this, I sometimes believe that we were so busy being a good government that we forgot that we also have to keep our party strong and vibrant. And the party is where you keep your connection with the electorate. You keep making sure that you're listening to what they have to say, and then you have to modify anything that you do in terms of things that you need to press for. And that's very important, and we understand that. And we've had a very difficult lesson. And I sometimes say that our success was also something that caused us our failure, in the sense that how many times have you seen a new party, brand new out of the gate, come around and get formed and win the government? You know, so that was a significant achievement. But it then meant that we had so much to do as the government that came and had Bermuda in a very precarious fiscal position. And so in some cases, some of the things that we did, while good for finance, we also had to recognize that we're also there to take care of the people as well. So we've learned that we must never lose sight of what's good for Bermuda and making people understand some of the things that we're doing, and if we have to weigh them up, we have to look at them.
What way have you learned? I mean, if you could turn the clock back, what would you do differently, or would you recommend doing differently? Because you made the point in the speech when you were sworn in by the governor, and you said we have to reconnect and we have to turn around and build the structure and get the people to come back into the room, then turn around, work on making sure that we listen. That's a big thing that has to happen. We have to listen to what the people of Bermuda are telling us. How, if you're saying that was wrong in the first place, you stop doing that, what lessons have you learned that you can actually practically implement? Or is there anything specifically you want to do or plan to do to try and reconnect?
Well, I mean, Leah, we've been talking about getting out and having meetings with, you know, in all the constituencies to talk to people about what's happening in their constituency, what are the key issues that is important to them, and what can we do to help them change, have a change in their life or a change in what's happening to them. So those are types of things. Now, there's a difference now when you're the government than when you're the opposition. And so in some respects, you know, that's going to make some of the things that we can do now different from what we could have done when we were the government. I mean, we put a lot of money into, you know, financial assistance, but we also know that education is very important, and so there's lots of things that we can actually try and work on and make suggestions to the government, make suggestions to the people that we're talking to about things that they can do, that we can do to try and help them. So
you mentioned hitting the trail, as it were, to Somerset, to St George's. Is that going to start in the new year?
Yes.
And that's going to be a series of town hall meetings and things like that, is it?
A number of things, town hall meetings, fireside chats, things that we want to do. You know, I must admit, I've, you know, been out talking to some people, and they're sort of saying, hey, I want to get out of my constituency. I know I'm a regional. I want to get out and do the things that we did before, which is to have people come and let's discuss what's happening, not just what's happening in their area, because sometimes things that are happening in their area are happening in other areas as well, and then you suddenly realize that this is a national issue as opposed to just a parochial issue.
Leah, you're a kind of original OBA MP, if you like. Mm-hmm. Is this the kind of strategy you want to see moving the party forward?
Partly, yeah. I think that despite the fact that we were a very good government economically, people are still struggling, and the challenge economically is not just in Bermuda, it is worldwide. There is a huge income disparity between the wealthy and the not so wealthy, and the middle class has almost been eliminated. And I think that what people want is for us to really understand and to be able to find solutions to help them, whether we're the government or not. There are some strategies and some solutions that we can put into place that don't require money. They just require time, and they just require ideas. And I think that people who are struggling no longer want empathy. They don't want pity. They don't want you to feel sorry for them. They want to know how they can be helped.
Practical solutions.
And I think that the important thing is that whether you're government or whether you're opposition, you have to be inclusive of the members of the community. because we don't have all the ideas. The opposition doesn't have all the ideas. The government doesn't have all the ideas. You have to collectively meet with the people who are affected or not affected to come up with solutions and strategies that can help people community-wide.
So I take it from there then that we will see in the not-too-distant future the OBA rolling out some policies, some strategies.
I think that you will find us, as we start to look at things, as we've said sometimes, there's no reason why we can't come up with an opposition bill or an opposition proposal, because if it's good, then we should put it out there, and hopefully if it's good, that the government of the day will decide to investigate it. And if the government of the day has something that's good, then we should be able to be supportive of it. And if we're supportive, then our main goal after that will be to make sure that it's implemented in the right way, because the bottom line is a good policy is no good unless it produces the outcome for the people that it's supposed to help. I get so frustrated when I see things that get put in, but the people that you want to help don't get the help, or it's not implemented in a way that you produce the benefit.
Well, one of the very important issues in a Westminster-type system is the opposition. You're there to hold the government to account. Mm-hmm. Do you think with 12 MPs, you've got a sizable majority facing, are you going to be able to be an effective opposition?
We have no choice but to be an effective opposition.
How are you going to do it?
I think we have to continue to do our research, to address issues that are affecting the public that we don't think that the government is addressing properly. I think that because we are such a minority, the government and the opposition have to work harder to be more collaborative. And sometimes
collaborative. Are they going to be collaborative with a 12-seat majority?
I have not found them not being collaborative. I mean, I am the shadow to Jamel Simmons, who's a tourism minister, and I think that we have a pretty open and communicative relationship. And I think, I've got relationships with other people that are members of the PLP, and I think they're open. I get that the Westminster system is naturally combative, but I think you don't have to fight, you don't have to make a fight where there isn't one.
But I think the other side of it is, though, that, and that's what I said earlier, if there are things that they're going to do that we should support, then we will. But if the things that they're doing that we support, that the implementation is not up to where it needs to be, then that's the type of thing that, as the opposition, that we can draw to their attention and draw to the people of Bermuda's attention, because Bermuda wants us to make sure that whatever we do is going to be good for them, whether it be spending money or whether it's producing results. And so going forward, I maintain that our party will be the loyal opposition, because I believe it's very important for us to be loyal to the people of Bermuda. And if that's the case, then you're not doing things just for political gain, because too often I think we've seen things where it's damaged Bermuda, and we don't need that.
Your leadership got off to a slightly rocky start. You had the announcement of Nick Kemp, the chairman, mm-hmm. resigning, and he said that in his letter of resignation, he said, "I am sadly convinced that the leadership is the embodiment of a mindset that has failed the electorate in the past." Then you got Michael Fay, your former OBA minister, coming out and talking Mr. Kemp's resignation, saying it was unfortunate, but it was absolutely the right thing to do. Then you get another former leader, Craig Kennedy, coming out and saying in relation to his resignation, "I don't know what Miss Atherton was thinking, quite frankly." What happened? What happened with the Nick Kemp scenario?
The only thing I can say is that, as I've said before, I believe, and I said in my speech to the conference, that I believe that it's important for us to recognize that the One Bermuda Alliance is the future, and that we have to do a lot to make sure that we get them, to develop them, and make sure that they grow. And so, from my perspective, enabling Justin, who is the chairman of the Future Bermuda Alliance, to be in the Senate was an opportunity for us to show that we want our young people to get involved.
Nick Kemp's pretty young.
But I'm not saying that Nick's not pretty young, but the other side of it is that, and this is where it goes the rest of it, I still believe that the chairman of the party has a big role to play. that working with the chairman and the leader working together, that there's lots that we could do in terms of getting out there and demonstrating that the One Bermuda Alliance has a lot to offer.
So you say it was the workload of being a senator and chairman of the
party? There's so much that we have to do as a party that I have a real concern that we have a chunk of work to do, and therefore I wanted to make sure that the Senate is one place and the chairman of the party is another.
Just as a matter of interest, right. Did you disagree with Lynn Woolrich being a senator and the chairman of the party?
I look at the results that we had, and I have a real concern that based on doing that, that we had some things that we could have done differently. And someone said that. And if I look back at hindsight, I would think that when I see the party stuff that needs to be done going forward, it's a real significant role. And I've tried to say to anybody who I talk to that being in the Senate is not the only way to turn around and demonstrate that you have the ability to be someone who could run for a seat, or the only way that you turn around and say that this is the way that you're going to be given an opportunity. There are many different ways.
Because the optics, I think it was 5 days into his chairmanship that he resigned. The optics were very bad for you, weren't they, at the time?
I'm sorry that he chose to resign. I mean, with the replacement of someone in the Senate is not the first person that's been replaced. And people have been able to feel comfortable that unhappy, but there was the opportunity for them to still continue. So it's just unfortunate.
I mean, the key phrase, and I'll read it again, because you're part of the leadership here now. He says, "I'm sadly convinced that the leadership is the embodiment of a mindset that has failed the electorate in the past." And if he's convinced of that now, that's one person's opinion, obviously, but it speaks to the fact that you're not managing to move it forward, perhaps, in the way you want to. Or he's not convinced that you're going to manage to do that.
I don't know how you manage a situation like that to everyone's satisfaction. And, you know, Jean made the decision that she thought was the correct decision. I have been in ministerial posts and been removed, and I wasn't happy about it, but it's what happens.
So you're confident still that your strategy is the correct one, despite what Nick Kemp says, attracting younger people?
I think that it's going to be a challenge. I think realistically, whether Nick was chairman or not, we still have a challenge ahead of us. I think that people are just sitting back and waiting. They want to see that we are going to be different. And so it's important that we get out there and connect with people. But people are watching, so they want to see. They want the demonstration. And they want to know that it's real. We had a real trust deficit. You know, we don't have any trust capital. So we're having to rebuild all of that. And, you know, there are people that say, you know, we've got to get rid of all the old UBP people and move forward. And I understand that. And I guess the analogy for me would be if I don't know if you've ever played the game of Jenga.
No.
So Jenga is a game where you build blocks and then you pull the blocks out and try not to have the whole thing topple over. And so we don't want to have the whole thing topple over. So there are some blocks that are necessary to maintain stability. And you have to keep those blocks in place as you build. And then as you build and your foundation gets firmer, then you can start to make the changes that you need to make the shift that you want. Change doesn't happen overnight. It's not going to happen quickly. And I know that people are looking for a fast change, but it's just, we've got to build ourselves up. You know, one of the things that I can recall is when the PLP went down to 7 members, and now they're up to 24. It can be done, but we've got to work at it. We've got to be a unit. We have to understand what the people want from us and what they expect from us. We are public servants. We are here to serve the public. We don't have our own agenda. We are there to serve whatever their agenda is and to achieve whatever goals are going to make them comfortable and satisfied living in their own country. And that's important. And I hope that we can be actually national, and not just white Bermudians and black Bermudians, but just Bermudians. You know, people that are proud of their country, people that are proud to be Bermudian, no matter what color you are.
You say you don't have an agenda. I understand what you mean, but most political parties do. If they don't have a philosophy, they at least have a collection of ideas that form a kind of agenda. Where would you place yourselves in that sense? You know, you've got a collection of ideas. Have you got a philosophy? Have you got a position that you want to use as your base? So well, you can use it to build up.
Well, I think that, and we had this conversation in terms of saying, well, you know, you have one party, which is Labour, and so where are we? And so I think that, you know, we've always maintained that it's important for us to work for Bermuda, all Bermudians. And that's why, you know, I've stressed that it's important for us to turn around and increase our diversity. And, you know, that, and as Leah says, that's black, white, women, men, women, age, and everything, because if we're going to try and improve the well-being of the people of Bermuda, then it means that we have to be thinking about what's important to them. We have to be hearing from them some of the issues and making sure that they get into our room, because part of the way we're set up is that people can come in and talk and be part of what we decide to work on, our policies. And so, you know, I keep saying when I see the people, come into the room, come and talk to us, because, you know, we have some things that we have, obviously some core values that we believe in, but as it relates to, you know, the policies, those are not sort of in one particular direction. But I think that, you know, we as we reach out, as more people come in, you talk about, as Leah was talking about, trying to make sure that we don't do something that causes everything to collapse. But as I look at it this way, and I said, you know how you have something that's concentrated? The more people that you come in, it dilutes it. And so the more people that we come into the room that have different ideas and come with different backgrounds, etc., then it means that when we make our decisions, the decisions then reflect the broader spectrum of people that we're talking to. And so we always welcome people to come and talk, and so that we can discuss things in the room as to the direction and what's important.
You touched on the UBP a minute ago, and again, Michael Fay, I think, indicated in a story on Bernier's that the OBA should cut all ties with the old OBA. I'm assuming it means the UBP. You yourself, Ms. Atherton, have said, talked about new blood being needed, as you mentioned that here. And you, Leah, you've been quoted as saying, as with all things, there are some form of UBP people looking to transition out. What does this mean? Does this mean that you expect some of the former UBP members to retire from politics, perhaps, or transition? When you say transition themselves out, what are you looking at?
I think that at some point, yes. But I think it's important.
Some point in this election cycle. So the next 4 or 5 years.
The next 4 or 5 years, yeah. I think that, as I said, it's important. You know, there has to be a fundamental mind shift. And does getting rid of all the UBP people create that mind shift? The perception is that it will.
It's always been an issue for you guys, hasn't it, though, mm-hmm. because you're part OPA, part UBP, many mm-hmm. people's minds. In fact, I've come across a lot of people that kind of say UBP by mistake.
But you also have to be careful, because there's a lot of political history, there's a lot of political acumen, there is a lot of knowledge in the old UBP. However, you know, we've got to get people in, we've got to get them groomed up, and we've got to get them ready to go. And, you know, I think that there are people that have been in politics for a long time that are ready to go, whether they're UBP or not. You know, they've served their time, they've done what they needed to do, or achieved what they wanted to achieve. And so they're ready to groom others to take their place.
You laughed.
I laughed because the one thing I said when we were at the conference was the fact that I believe that it's important for us to have the persons who have been around and have the stronger seats to mentor the people that are coming forward, so that as we bring new people in the room who aspire to be political, you know, politicians, etc., we mentor them, we get them out, so that you can have this, what I call, transition from people who have experience and expertise and have seats to be able to move out and, you know, go on to some other role. But I think the reason I smiled is because I look at some people and I'm thinking, I never knew you before, but I met you. I met some of them. And when I came into a room, which was a UBP room, so if you were in the room, does it mean that everybody that happened to be in the room at that point in time, are they brushed with a brush that says UBP? And that's why I think it's very important for us not to get into this sort of where people came from, because when you start off with only two political parties, at some point in time, people have been involved in parties, you know, forever, back and forth in between. We're talking really now about, we're trying to talk about what people want to do in terms of a mindset, a commitment to trying to do things for the people of Bermuda. And we never have the conversation about what happened in terms of, you know, the things that under the government that you talk about, what good things that they put in place, etc. You always talk about the negative stuff. So I'm not going to go back and sort of fight an old battle in terms of what people did back then, because, you know, we are where we're here now. We could go through and we can talk about lots of good stuff that was produced. What we're talking about right now is going forward, where we are in terms of Bermuda at a certain phase, a certain point in time. How do we make sure that things like the standard of living that we have, or the disparity in terms of income, how can we turn around and make sure that everybody in Bermuda has an opportunity to be able to get a good standard of living, to be able to work to support their families, to be able to go out and do the things that we all want. And that, to me, is the more important thing, not talking about where you came
from. Understood. Unfortunately, people's perceptions of their realities aren't there. And I think the PLP seem to be very good at, you know, linking the OBA with the UBP.
That's not surprising.
But it fed people's perceptions. It's very difficult for you.
But that's not surprising, because that makes a very good political strategy. So then...
For you to overcome that.
No, so then you've got one of two things. You've either got to turn around and do the opposite, which is to say, well, hey, if you look at that, there were some very good things that were actually built back then, or else you have to say, this is who we are, and these are the things that we've done for Bermuda. And, I mean, the OBA can turn around and talk about the good things that we've done in terms of bringing Bermuda to where it is in terms of the debt, bringing Bermuda to where it is with respect to trying to maintain a standard of living and making sure that we try and have safety nets and other things. So we have some positive things to, as the OBA, some positive things that we can build on. And so that's why I believe it's important for us not to lose sight of the positive things that as a party that we've done, and the fact that we have people in here who believe in helping people, who believe in creating opportunities, and those are the type of things that people in Bermuda would want to see happen as it relates to a political party. That's
do you expect some of the old guard to transition out as leader, please?
Yes, I'm certain that everybody who is in politics at some point in time thinks about, do I want to do this the next 5 years, 2 years, or whatever else? But I believe that most of those people that are in the strong constituencies will support the principle of trying to bring along new people and get them out and having the exposure, because that's the best place to learn in some of our stronger seats.
Leah, in the days when I was doing podcasts for Bernie's, before we moved into these live interviews, I interviewed you in June last year. And that was a time of fairly significant upheaval, I think, within the OBA. We talked about the late Sean Crockwell, the tourism minister at the time, how he was talking to the PLP about a possible coalition government. When I asked you if you supported Mr. Crockwell, you said yes, and asked if it was something you would have joined. You said something if it was something that could have been workable. I remember at the time there was a lot of disaffection. You were associated with the people who were disaffected. You seemed to be teetering on whether to leave the OBA or not. Now you're the deputy leader. Mm-hmm. What's changed in 18 months for you?
I think I've had to grow up and mature. The OBA is a party that I signed up for, and I'm not changing the team. This is the team that I want to be on. There are things that they did that I didn't agree with. I didn't agree with immigration. I didn't agree with some of those things. I probably could have vocalized my unhappiness in a different way, but I didn't. And I still stand on my principles. When things are wrong, and I think that things are wrong as a party, I will let the party know. Will I necessarily let it out in public? Depends.
But you're happy that things have changed?
I think that I want to be part of the change. I think that the PLP did a fantastic job of branding us by default. And so now it's our opportunity to be branded by design. And
branded by default, you were very bad, or you received a lot of criticism, I should say, for not fighting back on that front in terms of your communications.
Mm-hmm. We had poor communication. We did. And, you know, it's a lesson that we've had to learn from. We have to make sure that people hear us, that we hear people, that we express what their needs are, and that we understand what they need.
And I think this is what we were talking earlier about, saying that we can't let someone turn around and create the impression of who we are. We have to turn around and go out and make sure that we talk to people on their doorstep about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and then if we haven't got it right, then we have to be able to turn around and make the adjustment. And I think that being government is very difficult. You're madly trying to balance all of these things, but being a political party is equally important too, because without the people who understand what you're doing and support what you're doing, then you won't be able to stay in power. And so what we have to do now is that we have to rebuild. But if nothing else, I think this is our opportunity to start to grow again. As I say, we became the product of our success. Our success in terms of winning it was created a difficulty for us, and now we have to go back to the drawing board as to how we got there, which was talking to the people. We were not able to win those seats without being out there talking to people and relating to them. We just took our foot off the gas from the point of view of keeping that contact. So we have to.
Okay, just moving on to a couple of other areas now. I can't find anywhere that you've announced a shadow cabinet. Am I wrong? I don't recall you announcing a shadow.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. Very shortly. I because we were just in the middle of getting on with the business, I hadn't done that, but I will put it out shortly.
When do you expect that to happen? Before Christmas?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to see any surprises? People brought into the Senate, perhaps? No, we can't do that, can we? No, we've already done that. Excuse my ignorance. But no surprises there.
Right now, the important thing is I want to keep our team solid, and so right now, my important thing right now is to make sure that when we're in the House, being a strident voice there, from talking to the bills, making people appreciate the fact that we're looking at what's happening, and we're giving everything our attention. So it's team building.
We've got a vote tomorrow in the House. Walter Brown's bill to replace his same-sex marriage. You're not going to take part, the OVA is not going to take part in the conscience vote, as I understand it. You're going to vote against the amendments?
Well, the discussion that we had related to the fact that we believe that the courts have ruled, and why would we take away any rights that have been given to them? And I think that's pretty much sums it up.
So you don't agree with the bill as it stands? Because without the bill, you might end up getting Wade Ferbert's amendments to the Human Rights Act, or which will give precedence to the Marriage Act or the Human Rights Act. So isn't this the lesser of two evils?
I think that the legislation. I don't support same-sex marriage, but whatever people do is their business. I don't support it. However, I think that the court ruled and allowed people to have certain rights, and I think that unless the minister is able to explain to me in a way that differs from my current opinion, that it takes away some rights. And so,
yep. And that's I think that's the way we go.
I think that's the challenge.
We'll see. I imagine it will be passed tomorrow.
Yes, it will be.
And also, the other thing that's happened quite recently is the announcement by the Premier, the motion that was passed in the House to have a joint select committee on the events of December the 2nd. Where do you stand on this? Is this a good move to have this joint select committee on these events?
I think that if people need to satisfy their own souls and get to the bottom of whatever they think is at the bottom, then it's all right.
I think that, you know, having that will be good, especially if we're able to get people on there that go out and look to get information, because I think what I was concerned about was, especially when we had the debate in the House, that we were almost starting to write the report in the House. And I think everybody wants to get to what actually occurred and get the facts, because in order to deal with, you know, everything that went, it's something that you can't go in looking for the solution. I sometimes say, you talk about you have an answer to it. You already have the answer to the problem. Well, we really need to go and just get to the bottom of everything that occurred and be able to turn around and people feel that all the factors that got us to where we are have all been addressed, because you're never able to. It's like some, you know, you don't have instantaneous combustion. You suddenly look and think, how did it occur? But unless you go back and look at all the things that happened to sort of say, all of these things fact together created this, and that's what I think.
We don't know the makeup. We haven't been told who's going to be on the committee yet. But bearing in mind that virtually every MP, it seems, has had their say on this in the House or in public, and that there were MPs present on the day, is it right that a joint select committee made up of the MPs who have already spoken on it, who have given their position on it, who may have been there on the day, to handle it?
I think you need to wait and see what the speaker comes up with, because not everybody spoke on it, and
it seems like there's been a constant stream.
But I just think the speaker is going to try and come up with individuals who will be able to manage this, and we have to then have confidence that the persons will try and be as objective, because that's the bottom line. It has to be an objective. Sally, are you going to say something?
I just think that the members of the committee are going to be doing, I guess, what you call investigative research into it. And so I'm hoping that as they do their research, that there won't be any bias, but that they just look at the facts, look at what happened, look at the events that occurred, were the steps that were taken the correct steps, what could have been done differently, so that it's an objective, factual report. Yeah. And so I don't know that I would think that it's wrong that MPs that were or were not there should be comprising that committee.
You would be in favour of them calling MPs who were there?
Sure.
And that would be normal standard procedure to do that kind of thing?
Well, I think that they have to reach out to anybody that they believe is able to shed some light on how the events evolve, because as I say, without you looking at all the factors, you're not going to then get what I call the true assessment of how all of these things collided to have the result that we had.
But I believe it's going to have the power to recommend sanctions. Can join the select committee?
I'm not sure.
I'm trying to remember, because there was a revision that was made at the end. Remember there was an amendment, and I was just trying to remember whether it was something about
where. I don't know if that was common. I never heard it before, but that's just.
Yeah, I don't like. I can't speak
on
to that.
You mentioned that you were Joanne Simmons' shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any indication yet whether the minister's going to table the amendments to allow him to direct, to some extent, the Gaming Commission?
I haven't heard that he's not.
No, so right, because I understood that tomorrow was kind of December the 8th was kind of a deadline for this.
Yes.
And I wondered if you had any indication from the order papers whether it was still on there or not.
It's still on the order
it's
paper.
It's still on the order paper.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's not going to table it.
Yeah.
What's your position on it?
I'm against it.
Why is that?
Because I think that there has to be independence between the government and the gaming authority. I mean, and that was the basis for which it was formed. And I think that was one of the things that Sean, when he was the Minister of Tourism and developing the Gaming Commission, was adamant about. And I don't know what it was that the chairman, Alan Dunch, did that was so wrong, or what instructions he didn't follow that would have caused the minister to call for his resignation three times. There's never been any evidence produced of any wrongdoing. The legislation actually states what things the chairman has to do in order to be removed, and he didn't commit any of those offenses. And eventually he just decided that it was better for the country to remove himself. But I don't know what the reason is or the justification is for having him be removed and replacing him with Mrs. Mapp.
When I interviewed the minister a couple of weeks ago for Bernese, I asked if sort of removing the head, if you like, this Richard Schutz, the executive director's going, Alan Dunch is going, whether that's going to slow up the development of gaming. Do you have a view on that?
I think that it's going to be a challenge. I think that gaming is going to, if it gets off the ground at all in Bermuda, you know, we need international people on the Gaming Commission. This is something that's new for us. I don't know that there is anybody in Bermuda that has the level of expertise that Schutz and the guy before, I can't remember his name, but the gentleman before him have. I think also that there are banking issues that have to be addressed.
Well, this is all to do with the regulations. One interview with Alan Dunch explained the regulations are back with the AG, and they have to satisfy the US authorities before the banks will even think about the business case.
Well, people want to know that we have a proper framework in place.
You mentioned if it ever happens. Do you think it will happen? The debate about this...
I think it's going to be very challenging. I won't say that it won't ever happen, but I think that it's going to be challenging. How do you have gaming and you don't have a bank that's going to process the money or the proceeds?
And I think that's the point that we have to be mindful of. A lot of time was put into making sure that we had the independence for the commission. And as many things were put into place to make sure that there was the separation of things relating to gaming from the political side, because it's going to be very important that the correspondent banks are prepared to process the funds. It's very important when we go forward and looking at, you know, everybody's so worried about anti-money laundering and you know, money laundering, that why would we want to do anything that's going to compromise all the work that was put in those regulations to make sure that those, you know, that type of independence was there, to try and make sure that if we had to go out to a correspondent banker to talk about why, you know, you should deal with Little Bermuda, that all of these things were saying that, hey, there's a real robust, independent regime here.
I think it's a challenge just generally, Jeremy, with all of the things that are going on in the regulatory world. You know, Bermuda's in the spotlight. We've had the Paradise Papers come out. You know, we've got the IMF review coming up in 2018. We have all sorts of FATCA and CRS and TIA. And, you know, although we weren't on the blacklist, we are on the gray list, which means that there are certain things that we are required to comply with by 2018. And we're not aware of what those things are right now. But, you know, to have a gaming commission that is not independent of government interference is going to be one of those things that people are looking at, not just in gaming, but in businesses, people looking to establish business, people who want to direct in Bermuda. That's going to be something that they consider. So we have to be very careful.
By the time of the next election, will you be in a position to win?
I think that we need to focus on just being the best that we can be. I think we need to focus on winning back the trust of Bermuda. I think that we need to garner the support of the community. And I think our focus needs to be on just helping Bermuda and Bermudians live in a Bermuda that has a standard of living that's where everyone can be comfortable.
Will he be premier for 5 years' time?
The first thing I want to do is make sure that we are a strong opposition, because if we're not a strong opposition, we cannot hold the government to account. And that's one of the dilemmas. When you have the majority that the government has, you sometimes have people feeling, well, we can do whatever we want, and then you start to ride roughshod over, you know, lots of things which do not help the average Bermudian. So strong opposition first, and to be that, we have to get out, and as Leah says, we have to connect with our electorate. We have to make sure that we're doing things that's going to benefit them or to protect them from things which are going to harm them. And in some cases, some of these things we have to speak up because it could be harmful to Bermuda. And just because it's being put forward doesn't always mean that it's going to benefit the Bermuda that we want to see, the average person. And so therefore, strong opposition first, strong loyal opposition first, and then after that we will work on gaining the trust and making sure that, that we have that diversity which will help people help us come up with the direction.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you for tuning in to BURN U's Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burnhughes.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.